because Sayyid Hassani is very calm. Now, I'm never tense, nor am I, of course, at times calm. Every time, on each occasion, I speak in a specific way. Today, I want to speak about you, about the brothers and sisters, and I'd like to speak also about Lebanon. I will speak about the situation in Lebanon, and we are now in a very, very important stage concerning the elections. And I will end my speech with a very, very important subject about the 17th of May and the 7th of May, of course, what happened in Lebanon previously last year when there were some internal confrontations. First of all, I would like to congratulate all brothers and sisters. As I said, it was decided that I was going to speak about the Israeli military maneuvers today, but I have delayed this speech on Israeli military maneuvers until Monday, and today I'll speak about the Lebanese internal situation, and I'll congratulate the graduates, those who have graduated. So, of course, a change in schedule has been made. I will speak about the youngsters, how our youngsters are striving to achieve a good stance, a good position in society, and also to grab a good understanding of Islam. And this is jihad in the cause of God. Of course, I will also speak, as I said, about the Lebanese internal situation before or in the run-up to the parliamentary elections. And I announce in the name of your brothers and sisters, I announce that we are very proud of you and we salute you. And I would like also to express my thanks and my gratitude to all the women and children, fathers and mothers. As in any graduation ceremony, the mothers and fathers supported the continuation of the education for the youngsters in university and in school, and they put up with all of the obstacles or the hardships of such a decision. And we do know that a high majority of the Lebanese and the Lebanese families are, of course, living in a very, very difficult situation, living under the poverty line. But in spite of this, we do notice that many mothers and fathers are doing their utmost and are putting up with many hardships, economic difficulties, in order to provide for their children a chance for education, for university education, and to create a real future or to bring about a good future. I, of course, salute the mothers and fathers who are fighting in the cause of God, because actually to put up with this poverty and to provide the best possible future for the Lebanese youngsters is fighting in the cause of God. So this is also a kind of jihad in light of the poverty which Lebanon is suffering, the economic disastrous situation. The Lebanese families are trying to raise the level, are trying to bring about a better future for their children. And there is also a group of people who I must thank. Many times we don't thank them. I would like to thank the families specifically, the husbands actually, the men. And so this could explain that the number of women is smaller than the number of men. Of course, the men in Lebanon, or the men here in this country, many of the Lebanese husbands allow for their wives to continue with their education. This is what raises the stance in the society. Of course, a wife who continues with her university education, this has very, very positive repercussions. It has a positive impact on the household in general. And we find that this is growing, this is increasing. This actual scene is increasing, and it's a very, very positive sign. In addition, the wives who actually help their husbands and the husbands who help the wives to continue their education, who lend a hand in the household. This is also what leads to good results. And for this reason, today I would like to express a special thanks to all of those husbands who facilitated the road, or who made the road easier for their wives, the road to continuing study, in spite of all of the difficulties. My dear brothers and sisters, of course, this graduation group today is named Ridwan. Ridwan is named after the martyr Imad Mughni, may peace be upon his soul.
And that, as you can see, is a part of a speech made by the Secretary General of the Hezbollah movement in Lebanon, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, in the, I assume, the graduation ceremony for some Lebanese student. He thanked and hailed those Lebanese students and also hailed all Lebanese people for living under harsh conditions and hard living conditions. And now we are, of course, waiting for Sayed Hassan Nasrallah to continue his speech to the phase with the Israeli maneuvers. We're waiting for that. But for the time being, we're going to go back to the normal course of our programming. As soon as he makes that speech about the Israeli maneuvers, we're going to be back with you from Beirut Live. Let's listen to that.
Today or in the future, we refuse the dividing of Lebanon. We want a unified country. And now, thank God, after all of the plans to divide Lebanon, after all the regional schemes and international schemes to divide Lebanon have failed, I don't think anyone is considering this scenario anymore to divide Lebanon. But I'd like to tell you something very clearly. We still do have some who think about dividing Lebanon. Certain politicians here in this country still think about dividing the country. And I know these are not only dreams for certain figures. Certain figures have wishes. Certain figures wish to divide Lebanon. And they do express their opinions in private meetings. They are planning to divide the country. Of course, they speak about federalism, having a federalism in Lebanon. But we won't allow this in Lebanon. We want Lebanon one country, one people, and we want a country with one territory and one state, one ruling authority. And Lebanon cannot put up with any other scenario. Lebanon cannot be subject to a rule of federalism or divisions. Of course, I'll go back to another subject in due course. It's very interesting that some who accuse us of creating a third country, they themselves are working to bring about a federal rule in Lebanon, to apply federal laws and make Lebanon a federal country, divisions in Lebanon. Now, I will speak about the political situation in Lebanon. We, first of all, before I go into this, we look forward to Lebanon being a country for Lebanese, but without any racism from one group against another, without any racial arrogance, which has no foundation, no logical, legal, or moral foundation. There is no foundation and no justification to have racial arrogance against another race, against other Arab countries. Some people identify themselves as being Lebanese more than other Lebanese citizens. Now, we also look forward to having a Lebanon of Arab identity, an Arab Lebanon, but without being an extremist Arab Lebanon, because extremism means ignorance, which has no place in logical thinking and which has no place in religion or any humane or humanitarian thinking. Now, concerning the ruling authority and the state, now, I think that in this subject there are not many disagreements amongst the Lebanese, but they might disagree in how to translate or how to interpret or the means to build a state. We, of course, in our electoral program, we said, as you've read in the Taif Accord, we called for putting together a higher national council to bring an end to racial sectarianism. Let me be very clear. We spoke frankly in our electoral agenda. We did not say we want to put an end to political confessionalism or sectarianism. We spoke about a higher council to put an end to political sectarianism. What we want is to put together this higher council, which must sit down. Not for 1 or 2 weeks, or for 1 or 2 months, or 1 or 2 years, for whatever time it wants, to look into this issue. They must study this very, very important fundamental issue in our political rule, in our political landscape, so we could reach our result. So then the question would be raised, do we want to continue with this way in politics, the way of sectarianism? If this is agreed upon, then we can continue. Then we have to address certain problems which could be discussed and could be agreed upon. Maybe, of course, this higher council would reach the following conclusion. It could reach the conclusion that we must put an end to the sectarianism issue in our politics and to lay out a plan to put an end to this and to organize or to think about an alternative direction for our politics in Lebanon. So in this issue, we are not calling for any hasty decisions to be made, and we are not calling for certain decisions to be imposed from one Lebanese group on another. But what we are calling for, or what we are stressing, is that any fundamental change in the political landscape in Lebanon must be based upon national dialogue and must be based upon deep national deliberations and real national consensus, because hasty decision making or the attempt to impose the will of one group against another could have very, very negative, dangerous repercussions. Even more dangerous than leaving the current political situation as it is. Of course, the situation whereby we have sectarianism playing the main role in our politics. The second point is that we are looking forward to one country. And I do not want to defend Hezbollah. What I want to say to you, what I want to highlight, is that ever since Hezbollah was founded, we support one unified Lebanon. And so for this reason, during the past few years, we did not grab any power, or we did not grab any influential positions. Even in Bint Jbeil, after the liberation of Lebanon, during the year 2000, I said we were not an alternative to the ruling authority. We don't have a judiciary body, and we don't want to hold anyone accountable, even those spies who worked for Israel, who killed us and shed our blood and oppressed us and who put us in jails. We're not even qualified to hold them justifiable. We're not even qualified to try them because we don't have a judicial body. So from the very beginning, we did not seek power, nor did we impose our will. We always called for a unified country. But in the history, or during the last 20 to 30 years, many other factions who speak to us about one unified country behaved in the contrary manner, tried to show themselves as being ruler of one certain smaller entity inside Lebanon. So those who called, some figures who called for unified country behaved contrary to their own rhetoric. and actually worked to divide the country. So we support the just, unified country, a country which has a strong government and a strong parliament, and a parliament which represents the will of the people, a judicial body which is independent and which is strong. We support a strong army, strong intelligence services. And so in these issues, we have no disagreement with others. There is one point of disagreement, which is resistance and the weapons of resistance and the strategy of defense. And of course, there are many arguments about this controversial topic, but we still don't view we'll continue to hold these consultations, to hold discussions about the weapons of the resistance. And in light of the developments which we are witnessing around us, I say that Lebanon can have strong resistance and can have a strong state at the same time. Nothing prevents from having a strong state and a strong resistance at the same time. A strong Lebanese state can, of course, make progress in Lebanon. When a state is strong, it can say that we have a state that can protect its security and protect its people, and can tell the resistance, you can go back to university, you can go back to education, you can go back to your farms, to your factories, go back to your normal lives. This is a strong state. When a state is strong, it can actually make such a request. Now, in the same perspective, we also look forward to a Lebanon which has real administrative reforms, good administrative reforms far away from any blackmail, from any scandals, financial scandals, far away from any corruption. We call for an electoral law which gives a chance for the best possible representation of the people, and we, from the depth of our hearts, we support electoral law which represents the people, which brings about appropriate representation of the people. Now, I'll leave a political partnership until the end, because the issue of a political partnership and partnership in ruling authority is an important thing which I'll leave to the end of the speech. Of course, I call for a state which can address the social and economic hardships and makes these issues a priority to address, to end the sufferings of the Lebanese, contrary to what we witnessed during the last few years. We also call for a state which is honest concerning rebuilding and growth, and we believe that the normal condition is to have a ministry which is assigned with the task of planning on how to use the resources of Lebanon, and also taking into consideration the needs of Lebanon, a comprehensive perspective for a comprehensive plan in order to bring about appropriate mechanisms which take into consideration a balance and a just distribution of resources to rebuild all the country in an equal way in all territories in Lebanon. So in between brackets, I'll tell all the universities, graduates, when you end your study, you will be facing a challenge of how to get into the working market. Of course, the employment market, how to get jobs. Now, we have two roads. The first one, of course, the personal perspective. Each one of us thinks how to provide a job for his son or for a member of his family, by, of course, contacting certain political factions. The second scenario, the second direction, is to have a government in the near future, a government which sets as its priority the addressing the pains and the poverty of the people, the unemployment problems which we are facing. Not to give it 4 or 5 years and to watch political divisions and to forget all about the problems of the people. They knew from the very beginning, if they used all the political and military and media means, they will fail in achieving their aims. So, of course, the political or the ruling authority previously tried to use all its time in overthrowing or ruining the image of the other group and forgot about addressing the needs of the people. So we must bring about an honest government, a government really representing the people, a government which comes from the people, which addresses the hunger, the sufferings, so that this government can specify honest solutions, whether it be in growth or society or finance or economy or employment. We also look forward to having a strong independent judiciary, a judiciary which is independent from any politicization, from any political, official or unofficial positions. What we have in Lebanon now is not a judicial authority, even if some people say the contrary, but actually we do not have a judicial authority at all. We have judges who have been appointed. We have honest judges, and we also have corrupt judges. We have free, independent-minded judges who make their own independent decisions, and we also have judges who work for certain political factions. And please tell me, what can we say about a judiciary which punishes spies, Zionist spies, or spies who work for the Zionists, who worked and collaborated with Israel for tens of years and committed the worst crimes and betrayed their country, the biggest betrayal? What kind of judiciary which puts these people in prison for 1 or 6 months or 1 year, then frees them once again, liberates them once again, so that they go back to their spying activities? And what can we say about this same judiciary which puts four high generals in jail for 3 years and 8 months without any investigation, without any evidence, of course, in reference here to the Hariri assassination? Is this a judiciary we want? Is this an independent judiciary? Is this an honest judiciary? This is shameful. It's really shameful. Those who collaborate with Israel for years and years are imprisoned for 1, 2, 3, 6 months. And from the very beginning, we pledged that we will turn those people over to the Lebanese judiciary. We didn't do what other resistance movements did throughout history. All resistance movements in history, all of them, I'd like to underline, all of them, made their own tribunals and tried these spies themselves, not in the national judiciary, except for us. We were the only resistance movement to turn over the spies to the judiciary of the country. And I told the French ambassador, after Luspan visited occupied Palestine and what happened to him in Bir Zayd, I think you remember what happened. When that French official described Hezbollah as a terrorist organization, and just a few months after that, we saw the liberation of Lebanon. And I read at that time about the French resistance, and I asked a question to the French ambassador at that time. Of course, I told him, give my greetings to your Prime Minister and tell him that our resistance in Lebanon is more humane, more moral, and behaves in a way which is more appropriate, in a more humanitarian manner, than the French resistance. Because you, the French, you established your own trials and you killed tens of thousands of French spies at that time with the accusation of collaborating with the Nazis. But we did not kill even one chicken from the Lahad army. Not even one chicken. So we put our trust in the state, in the judiciary of the state. We do not put together our own tribunals. Now some person, maybe one figure in March 14 would respond to us and say the judiciary at that time was under the auspices of the Syrians. But now I'm speaking about this time. I'm speaking about this time, at this period, after the Syrians withdrew, the judiciary is behaving in the same way. During this period, we turned the spies over to the judiciary, and we pledged that we will not lay a hand or a finger on the spies. And many of them went back to their villages and went back to their houses. And I'd like to tell you right now, we still do pledge. We withhold our pledge. Nobody is allowed to lay a finger on these spies except if they are proven guilty. We are looking forward to a true, real judicial authority which is independent, which is strong, which behaves in a just manner and implements the law. We also have the issue of political partnerships. We call for having partnership in the ruling of the country, and we also call for cooperation in representing the people in order to administer the country, to administer the affairs of the country. So we are people who support a national unity cabinet, and this is not a failed experience. They are the ones who are trying to say it will fail. The other political group, March 14, what they say is the government will either be controlled by us or it will be a failed government. But a national unity cabinet, if all different figures, all different sides behave in the appropriate manner, a national unity cabinet won't be a failure. It's the best alternative for Lebanon, because any cabinet which ignores very important figures and very, very important factions that represent the Lebanese under the excuse that they get majority with 50% plus one or plus two, this is not the way to administer the country. This is not the way Lebanon is built politically. All factions must be represented. So I stress on the necessity of complete representation. And so, if Lebanon is not the special case, do you want democracy? Let's have a complete democracy. A complete democracy. And the best scenario for a complete democracy, the best scenario which can bring about democratic rule in Lebanon, is to have a parliament which is elected according to a complete electoral law, where Lebanon is one electoral constituency, not where the whole country is divided into different electoral constituencies. If you want a real democracy, let Lebanon be one electoral district or one electoral constituency. This is the complete democracy. If we don't want a complete democracy, because a complete democracy might do harm to the sectarian uniqueness of the country, then we must take into consideration this unique case of Lebanon. And in order to do this, we must not cancel out anyone. All factions must be represented. Now, concerning the one-third, of course, veto power, whereby we have one-third plus one, I call on all different factions, especially the future movement headed by Saad al-Hariri. Of course, recall the experience of the late Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri, and let them ask the question about the sufferings of Rafiq Hariri in forming the governments which he used to head when he was Prime Minister, and the reasons which prevented him from being Prime Minister of the last government before he was assassinated. Remember this, they will find that the reason, and I'll tell you, because I had a discussion with the late Prime Minister Hariri during the long meetings which we held months before he was assassinated and martyred. He told me, if one-third of the ministers in the cabinet are not for me, are not appointed by me, I will not put together a government and let them put the government they want. And so, for this reason, in all the governments which Hariri used to head, he always stressed to have one third of the ministers from different sectarian religious groups. When he was incapable of doing this in the last government, he apologized for taking part in that government. And of course, at that time, Omar Karami was appointed to form a cabinet. The real reason behind Rafiq Habib not forming the last government before he was assassinated was that he was not able to name one third of the cabinet ministers. And they can ask the friends, those who were close to Hariri. This is something normal in the country. Anyone who wants to be a real partner, anyone who wants to be a real political partner, must look for the one-third, to have one-third of representation in the cabinet. This is what a real political partnership means. So concerning us, I'm not saying that Hezbollah wants one-third of the cabinet. What I am saying is that the opposition called for having one-third of the cabinet ministers. The opposition, which is made up of different political factions and different political parties, the opposition which represented half of the Lebanese people during the past few years, and this is something which is very, very normal. Now, to go back to the talk about dividing Lebanon, let me go deep into this issue. Of course, they invented this. They actually laid this egg. Now you're going to, of course, accuse me after the speech of speaking about chickens and eggs a lot. But anyway, of course, they are the ones who laid the eggs and made it a chick, and this chick became a rooster which raises its voice. This is the whole issue. None of us in the opposition spoke about dividing the country, and nobody even understands what they're speaking about when they accuse us of dividing the country. Do they mean dividing it in a sectarian way? Do they mean dividing it in a religious way? Do they mean dividing it according to political alliances? I really don't understand what they mean when the other group accuses us of creating divisions in Lebanon. I really do not understand the meaning. Of course, they raised this and they made these accusations so that we could be on the defensive and so that they could be on the offensive. So I'd like to call on those in the opposition to put a stop to this, to, of course, not to respond to this. So let's put an end to this argument, this controversy about political divisions, about striving to create divisions in a country. We never even raise this issue. And there is no true foundation. There is another aim which they want to achieve. Of course, they want actually to change the opinions of the Christians in the opposition, the Christian figures in the Lebanese opposition, because today, when they say we have certain political factions who say that the Shia in the opposition want divisions in the country. They say Lebanon is divided between Muslims and Christians. Now, what they say is dividing it into thirds, one third for Sunnis, one third for Shiites, and one third for Christians. And Druze will be put with one of those three groups. Now, if this means dividing in order to have a political partnership, that's okay. Now, concerning Sunnis, if you tell the Sunnis, we want you to go from one half to one third, this serves the Sunnis in the opposition. And they are not focusing on attacking or targeting the opposition, the Sunnis and the Christians. Or the Sunnis and the Shiites, sorry, they're trying to target the Christians in the opposition. They're trying to tell the Christians in the Lebanese opposition, General Aoun specifically, and Minister Farangiyeh, Minister Scarf, all of the Christian figures in the Lebanese opposition, but especially General Aoun and the Free Patriotic Movement. Of course, what they're saying is that Aoun made a deal with Hezbollah and made a deal with the opposition, and he's satisfied with having the Christians representing one third. Now, as I said previously, the assumption was, or still is, Christians represent half. Now, Aoun made a deal and made the Christians represent one-third. But there is no truth to these allegations. We do not want to affect the representation of the Christians. We do not want to affect the Christians in general in Lebanon. These are lies, false assumptions. General Aoun did not think in this way, nor did anyone in the opposition, any of the Christians. We didn't even discuss this issue about going from half Christians and half Muslims to one-third of Sunnis, one-third of Shiites, and one-third of Christians. This is not the way we want to divide the country. So, we as an opposition, we must stop being on the defensive and just say that these are false allegations. But we must be clear. We do call for a political partnership. We do call for a representation of all factions. And we call for the implementation of the Ta'if agreement. And we call for developing our political rule, our political system, and to put together a higher council to address our political problems and to discuss the issue of political sectarianism. We also look forward to a country which is capable of protecting itself and protecting its own decisions and protecting its territories and its people and its security without needing any international peacekeeping forces which do not have any effect. With all due respect to them, they are guests in South Lebanon, but without needing any outside intelligence services. We as Lebanese, we have military and security capabilities which enable us to have power to take charge of these issues. And so, with respect, out of respect to the day, upcoming days, 17th of May, it's very, very unfortunate that those who wanted to cancel out the agreement of the 17th of May. Of course, we Lebanese, they try and make us forget, because we have all of this media covering all of these sufferings which we're witnessing in the country, they try and make us forget. Of course, the agreement of the 17th of May, which was signed by the Lebanese regime at that time, because the Lebanese regime was weak, and at that agreement, the agreement made Lebanon bow down to the Israeli conditions. Who signed the 17th of May agreement? This agreement goes back actually to former President Ismail. Who signed this? Who wanted Lebanon to be attached to Israel by signing the 17th of May agreement? Which political factions collaborated and were part of this plot? Which Lebanese tried to make Lebanon a country part of the Zionist project? And who stood against the 17th of May agreement? The religious figures, the women and children, who stood against this? Especially those in Bir al-Abad, in the mosque of Imam Rida, may peace be upon him. Who shed his blood to announce the popular Lebanese refusal of the 17th of May agreement? Who was it except for the martyr Muhammad Majdi, who sacrificed with his blood so that Lebanon would be independent from Israel? And who signed the humiliating agreement with Israel? Once again, this agreement was signed by former President Hamid Ismail. Now today, those who wanted to make Lebanon part of Israel are those same figures who are calling for liberation and independence. And those who shed their blood and sacrificed their blood for the sake of Lebanon are accused of being spies and accused of working for the outside agenda. Isn't this unjust? Isn't this oppression? Isn't this unacceptable? They will now go back and say Sayyid Hassan is accusing people of being of betraying the country. Now, we're not judging anyone. I'm speaking according to history. We must always remember history. So those who worked for Israel before are now saying they're independent-minded, and those who sacrificed the blood for the sake of Lebanon are being accused now of working for an outside agenda. So this is unacceptable. We do not want our country to be sold once again. We want a strong country. We want a country which is capable. We want a country which can get back its territory with its own will, not by begging to Netanyahu or by begging to anyone else. We do not get our land back by begging to Netanyahu during an electoral period. In these very days, our people and our brothers in South Lebanon, the men and women, of course, used to go to the military posts and to the military headquarters and to the villages and used to make miracles, the miracles of the historic liberation. This is the Lebanon which we look forward to. This is the Lebanon we want. And so, based upon this, I would like to point out to one final issue. Yes, we want Lebanon which can cooperate amongst its brothers, amongst its politicians. Lebanon which is far away from any internal conflicts. Just a few days ago, we had the anniversary of the 7th of May, the events of 7th of May. Now, we in the opposition, we said that we do not want to raise this issue because raising the issue of the events of the 7th of May will lead to more hostility. And we are now in an electoral campaign and run up to elections, and it's not appropriate to bring up such a subject. But the other political side, unfortunately, before the 7th of May and after the 7th of May and until today, the other political alliance has raised this issue on the media, in public speeches. This issue has been raised. 7th of May, of course, refers to the events of last year when the two decisions were taken against Hezbollah's telecommunication network, which led to violence in Lebanon. Now, what they thought is that when we are silent and when we didn't raise this issue, it's as if we, of course, are ashamed of ourselves. But I do not want to go into a confrontation, but it's my duty to comment on what is being said out of loyalty to the martyrs who fell on the 7th of May or during the events on the 7th of May and after the 7th of May, so that we can put everyone in the right picture. Everyone will be in the picture. Let me remind all of you. As I said, I don't want to speak in a hostile rhetoric or in a confrontational rhetoric. I want to remind you, those who are speaking about 7th of May, let them remember what they did on the 5th of May. Let them remember what they did on the 5th of May. It's enough to get the Vinograd report. The Vinograd report, the Israeli committee, of course, said that one of the elements of strength of Hezbollah, which we must address, is the telecommunications network. The telecommunications network of Hezbollah. The Israeli Vinograd report even said that this issue must be addressed. Does anyone have a doubt that the Israelis spy on the cellular phones or on the phone landlines? Does anyone doubt that the Israelis listen into all our contacts, and the most technologically advanced equipment is in Israel's possession, because Israel has this equipment from America? Yes, the most important weapon, not one of the most important weapons, let me once again repeat. The most important weapon of the resistance in the July 2006 war was the telecommunications network, because this telecommunications network can prevent spying or listening in to the calls. Of course, on the 5th of May, the night of the 5th of May, the Lebanese cabinet held a meeting, and the issue wasn't even on the agenda of its meeting, but in spite of this, it decided to dismantle the telecommunication network and consider this as illegal and considered it as against the sovereignty of Lebanon, and it made the decision to, of course, take all of those who were responsible in taking part in building this telecommunication network to the judiciary, of trying all of those who took part in building and developing this telecommunication network. The Lebanese cabinet must remember, the former Lebanese cabinet must remember that the 5th of May was a shameful day in its history, because the Lebanese cabinet was aiming to accomplish something which Israel was incapable of accomplishing for 33 days. This is what happened on the 5th of May. As I said, this telecommunications network protects us from any eavesdropping from the Israelis. And the second main question, of course, we heard reports on the media, we heard, of course, or we also saw on television screens certain reports. Why did they use many fighters outside Beirut before the 5th of May? I'd like to ask the inhabitants of Beirut, those who are being requested to respond to May the 7th. Of course, the other political group is calling on the inhabitants of Beirut to vote against us, to take revenge against us because we allegedly did Beirut harm on the 7th of May and after the 7th of May. But I'd like to tell the inhabitants of Beirut, please ask the question, who made Beirut a city full of militias, full of militiamen, a city full of weapons, of weapons companies, and the different justifications, and also raise the question, who brought many fighters from outside Beirut and deployed them in the streets of Beirut and in certain apartments and units during the time where a very, very harsh political campaign was being launched against Hezbollah and the telecommunications network before the decision was made on the 5th of May? This is the question which must be asked. Who made Beirut a city full of militiamen, a city full of weapons? This is a legitimate question which must be raised. Beirut was transformed into such a city before the decision was made by the cabinet against the telecommunications network. What was the plan? The plan was, on the 5th of May, the cabinet would make the decision. What would Hezbollah then do? If Hezbollah just holds a protest, a sit-in, a strike, makes a statement, then they would be safe. Here I'm referring to the other political alliance of March 14. That would be an introduction. When they dismantled the telecommunications network, their plan was to tackle other elements of power for Hezbollah. Now, if Hezbollah prevents them from dismantling the telecommunications network, that would put Hezbollah into confrontation against the army. So those same people who say they are working for the sake of the army and that they support the army, I'd like to tell you, those same people were striving to create a confrontation between the resistance and the Lebanese army, but they failed, because in Lebanon we have a national army, a patriotic army, and we have patriotic generals and patriotic soldiers who refuse a confrontation with the resistance. And so they looked into this issue. Even certain foreigners, foreign figures, looked into this issue and they asked the question, can this army, with its generals, with its soldiers, is this army psychologically ready to go into a confrontation with the resistance? And the conclusion was that this army cannot confront and is not psychologically prepared and ideologically and nationally prepared to fight the resistance. And so, for this reason, they prevented any type of assistance for the Lebanese army, because they considered that this Lebanese army cannot be trusted. Cannot be trusted for what? For protecting the country, for the elections, for what? For the ruling authority. They discovered that the Lebanese army cannot be trusted to fight the resistance, and this is an honor for the army. This guarantees safety and security, And this is what the Lebanese army now represents, safety and security of the country. So if Hezbollah is not silent, and if Hezbollah goes towards a confrontation in Beirut, thousands of fighters are ready. This is something which we didn't say at that time. My dear brothers, my dear friends, there was a plan which they had laid out. They knew what they wanted to do. They knew the areas which they wanted to occupy. They knew the places which they would cordon or cut off. And the plot was to create a sectarian conflict in Beirut which would continue for weeks, which would lead to calling troops from the outside, foreign troops, under the excuse that there is a sectarian war in Lebanon, so come and help us to put an end to the war. This was the plot, to bring troops from outside, foreign troops, into Lebanon. So, you know, what happened on the 5th of May was not a decision which they did not intend to implement. That night, they stayed awake until the morning. Why did they stay awake? Why did you call Saudi Arabia and Egypt and America and France on that very same day when you made the decision? This is no longer a secret. You can ask the cabinet ministers who took part in that meeting, in that cabinet meeting at that time. So it was not a decision which they did not intend to implement. The former cabinet, the former legitimate cabinet, took a decision to bring about a sectarian war in Lebanon between Sunnis and Shiites. This was the plot. And what the opposition did, and they want to just accuse Hezbollah. If I want to accuse Hezbollah only, we are ready. We're ready to take all you want. Take your best shot with all your accusations. I would like to say to all the Lebanese, but especially to the Shiites and the Sunnis in Lebanon, and especially to our dear people in Beirut, what happened on the 7th of May put a quick end to a sectarian war which they were preparing for, which they had taken all the measures for. We put an end, we put a quick end to burning out Beirut with a sectarian war. We put an end, a quick end to a huge conspiracy which was being prepared for against the resistance. The 7th of May put an end, of course limited the bloodshed in Beirut, saved the institutions in Beirut. It also prevented destruction of homes and houses in Beirut. They wanted Beirut to be burnt when they took this decision on the 5th of May. This is what happened on the 7th of May. The blood of our martyrs prevented all of this chaos and destruction. Last year, I was cautious and I kept silent, but after what I heard from the other group in the past few weeks, I consider that the 7th of May was one of the heroic days for the resistance in Lebanon. In the end, in conclusion, or the actual result was that the 7th of May put Lebanon on the road to a solution. The 7th of May allowed Lebanon to exit the crisis. The 7th of May imposed on the other political group to go back to the dialogue table, which they were refusing to sit on. The 7th of May led to the election of a consensus president and led to the formation of a national unity government. The days which we are living in now, the relative stability which we are living in now, is due to what happened on the 7th of May, is because of the blood of our martyrs who fell on the 7th of May. Of course, making a joke about the interruptions to his speech. I heard some slogans being repeated during the past few weeks. The other political group or political camp said, "We will not forget. We will not forget what will happen on May the 7th. That's good. What we want, we actually don't want you to forget the 7th of May. That's what we want. So we're very happy when you say we will not forget the events of May the 7th. This is what is required. This is required. My dear friends, this is what we want. We do not want to forget the 7th of May so that we won't see a repetition of the stupid acts of the 7th of May. Now, concerning those people whom you brought from outside Beirut to Beirut, they said that they brought thousands of fighters from Abqar and from the Biqar region to Beirut, fighters. I want to now speak fairly. We know the people of the Biqar and of Abqar are brave people whom we can rely on. Abqar is an area, of course, in northern Lebanon. Now, can anyone disagree with this? No. Of course, they are brave people in Abqar and in the Biqar. They never ran away from any battle. But you people, you were the ones who brought the inhabitants of Abqar and of Biqar not to fight Israel, to fight us. Why don't you try them against Israel? You tried them in a fight against their own fellow people, their own fellow citizens. You brought them from outside Beirut to fight the resistance, while the people in the Biqar and in Abqar are proud of the resistance. You brought them to fight the resistance whom they consider, whom every Arab considers, whatever religion he may belong to, every Arab considers the resistance as honor for them in this era. They believe that the resistance represents honor for all Arabs. So they didn't see any motive to fight their people in the resistance. So nobody can label the people of Abqar or the people of the Biqar as being cowards, but they were brought to the wrong battle, which they do not believe in, to fight the resistance. Is that enough for the 7th of May, or do you want more? It seems one of the people in the audience wants me to speak more. Sayyid Hassan speaking to one of the Hezbollah MPs. Anyway, my dear brothers and sisters, I apologize for taking so long, but yes, of course, we do not want to continue to speak about the 7th of May, nor the 17th of May. We take lessons from history. We don't want to use history to create hostility. We want to use history to learn lessons. We call for cooperation, we call for political partnership, and to forget the past, but at the same time to take lessons from the past and to stand shoulder to shoulder to build our country and to address all the different problems, to address every crisis our country faces. As I said, after the July 2006 war, when we achieved victory, and they didn't actually recognize this victory, and they still don't recognize this victory until today, but I repeat once again, we must stand shoulder to shoulder for the sake of Lebanon, for the benefit of Lebanon. From now, whatever the results of the upcoming legislative elections be, we need cooperation, we need cohesion to build Lebanon together and to protect Lebanon together and to raise Lebanon's name high in the whole world. My dear brothers and sisters, once again, I congratulate our brothers and sisters who have graduated, and of course I apologize for not meeting you in person, and I hope or I wish for my two colleagues, Sayyid Hashim Safiyuddin and Minister Muhammad.
That was a speech that came to you live here on Press TV. That speech being made in Beirut, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah there, Secretary General of the Hezbollah Movement, making those comments, he said...